Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another Wednesday night edition of Sports Conversation. I'm Don Henderson. We've got a great show for you this evening. Roy Cummings is always stationed in Tampa, Florida. A lot of things happening there. Roger Hendler is in Atlanta. A lot of things happening there as well over the last couple of weeks. And we also have some special guests across the board on baseball and football and almost everything. So we're going to get right to it. We'll take maybe some of your calls. Last week we got a couple of callers on the show that really put some input into it, so we'll do that again this week. We do have a dedication to start the program. A big loss in Tampa, Florida for the Tampa Bay Rays over the weekend. A longtime voice of the Rays, and Frank, it's all yours.
Hey, thank you, Don. Yeah, Dave Wills passed away, unfortunately, on Saturday. Dave had been with the Rays since 2005. Prior to that, he worked 14 years with the Chicago White Sox, and also with the play-by-play for both football and basketball for the University of Illinois. We send our deepest regrets out to his family. He was a good guy, a very happy guy every time I ever saw him. Knew his stuff back and forth. It was always a pleasure to be in his company. We also want to announce that this is program one of year 19 for Fighting Words. So Fighting Words is just it's a birthday day, and we just want to let everybody know. We want to thank everybody for listening all these years. It's really been a pleasure.
Thank you very much, Frank. And as I say, it's been a lot of fun. I think for everybody, everybody that's on the show tonight, and one other word of one of our past guests for many, many years, Leo Haggerty. Got an email from him today, and he's coming along nicely. Very, very happy to report that everything is in a positive note for Leo, and we'll, of course, keep updating that as the show continues over the weeks ahead. Roy Cummings, as I said, waiting in Tampa, Florida, and, well, we don't normally start, I guess, with football, but between the decisions made over the last couple of days, cutting players, getting down to the cap that needs to be cut down, Todd Bowles, I think, Roy is going to have a very, very tough time in this, his second year as the head coach of the Bucs, because they're going to break it down and start from scratch.
Yeah, it sure looks like it. You know, I can't imagine that Todd Bowles regrets taking this head coaching position based on what he was handed last year. But at the end of the day, boy, oh boy, he is now the head coach of a team on a rebuild, and it's going to be a long road back because they do not have cap money. They don't have draft picks at premium positions in the draft. It's going to be a tough go for these guys. And, you know, they've got some pieces here and there that they can work with, but the scouting staff is going to be challenged. The coaching staff is going to be challenged. The players are going to be challenged. A couple of these guys could actually come back. Because you do have, you know, they will have $228 million to play with at some point. But the best players on this team are going to be gone, and it's going to be a long, long road back. You know, one thing you can do without a lot of money in the NFL is play defense. And, you know, I think that's probably where the Bucs are headed. With Todd Bowles as the head coach, the best thing they could do right now is to really focus on defense. Try to keep as many good players there as you can, build that through the draft, and the offense is just going to take some time. But if you can start, you know, figure out a way to win some games, 21-17 or something, that would be nice. Maybe 17-16. But that's kind of where they're headed, I think, is it's going to take a while. I mean, we still don't know who the quarterback's going to be. I mean, they're talking, you know, nice about Kyle Trask, but it's hard to imagine he's the answer, and but we knew this was coming. You know, that's the other thing is anybody who's followed this team knows exactly where this was headed. The Glazer boys, they are not they're not about building a team through the draft. I think they try now on occasion, but they kind of get they lose their patience and they decide to go out and spend enormous amounts of money and give up on draft picks and things like that to bring in, Hall of Fame caliber players sometimes. And if it wins them a Super Bowl, they're happy for it. And if it doesn't, well, it didn't work out. And it did, and it didn't. So it did work out, and then it didn't. And so now they are where they are, and they're going to look a lot like the other teams in the NFC South. And that's one of the things that's good about it for them is that if you're going to pick a time when you're going to start to rebuild in that division, now's not a bad time to do it because you got a couple other teams in the same process. So we'll see how it goes.
The other thing is it's almost a duplication of what happened with him with the Jets. He came into the Jets, had a fairly competitive team the first year, got into the playoffs, and then after that the next 4 years were a total disaster until he was finally let go. Johnson and the New York and the Jets, and now he's in the same situation. Takes a team that just did struggle away into the playoffs this year, lost in the first round, but then, as you just indicated, a total missed group of players. We're just going to have to wait and see. Roger, a lot of good signings today, a lot of good things to talk about, and Mr. Johnson, the coaching staff, and the general manager all went to California on a private jet to talk to Aaron Rodgers yesterday. So they're trying to make a move.
Well, it is, and only time will tell. I still think that Rodgers will wind up ending his career at Green Bay, but I may be way off base. But, you know, the other thing is that Tom Brady's name has surfaced again about coming out of retirement. What do you
think? Yeah, he said that was a joke. He tried. He talked about that today, that he was just joking around. I, you know, maybe he's not. I don't know. Maybe you're right, Roger, but I don't think so.
Well, you know, he said that he's busy taking care of a two-month-old kitten at home. Hey, wait a minute. If that's the only problem that or the only job you have in life, it's not much of a job. That can be handled. But I don't know. I just I think it was interesting. There were not that many players. I think it was eight, I guess. That had the tag placed on them. And, of course, you know, we'll talk about Jackson with the Ravens with Mike later on. But he was at the top of the list. But, you know, I'd like to have the three of you, your opinion on what you thought of the players that were tagged.
Roy, let's go to the Giants first because they're outstanding running back. They're still negotiating with them, but they put the tag on them. And it came right down to the last minute because they finally gave Jones the big contract just before that 4 o'clock deadline. Otherwise, he would have been the player designated right. by the Giants. So what do you think about that?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's interesting. I think I'm correct in saying that everyone got the transition tag. It's not the big tag.
They did. No,
yeah.
You're right, Roy.
That is correct. Yeah,
yep.
And what that tells me is it's almost like there's a bit of collusion going on here. I in a way, I think, and I don't think it's in a mean way. I don't think it's mean-spirited. I mean, I don't think they're trying to really, you know, crush players or anything, but I think they are trying to recorrect. You know, in the stock market, you have corrections. You know, the stock market goes up, you know, 30, 40% over a period of time, and it'll come back 5%, 10%, sometimes 20%. I think what the owners in the NFL are trying to do is I think they're trying to force a correction in the price of top-level players. Because, first of all, if you're going to negotiate, you're going to give up two first-round picks. I can't imagine anybody's going to do that. And if you're going to, you know, and I don't think too many teams are actually going to put a, you know, bargain with some of the players who've been given this tag. Take Lamar Jackson, for example. I mean, teams are already saying, no, we're out. They're not even really looking at it seems. They're not even, you know, saying, well, hey, well, let's have a conversation with Lamar Jackson, who doesn't have an agent right now, and see what it is he wants. I mean, if you're a quarterback, a team in need of a quarterback and you've got cap room, why wouldn't you listen to the player? He's in his prime. Same with, you know, Saquon Barkley, some of the other players who've been tagged here. And so I think there's a bit of a correction going on in terms of what players are being offered on the market. Does anybody else see that or think that I might be on the right track here? I mean, it just seems to me like it's a little bit odd.
Well, no, I agree.
I sort of have to agree with Roy. I think your point
too.
Is well taken. I think that that's exactly what's happening. You know, they're willing to put the tag on, but they're putting the tag on with openings. But the openings, you don't think we're ever going to be picked up. Go ahead, Roger.
Yeah, well, I agree with you, fellas, 100%. And you know, Roy, we've talked about with Mike and also with Doug later on in the last few weeks about Jackson. And Jackson and his mother, like, you know, you said, he doesn't have an agent, but I just think, you know, he's shooting for the stars, and it's all because of that Deshaun Watson deal with Cleveland. I mean, and you may shoot for the stars, but you're not going to get very far in the universe, you know, because I think this adjustment, like you alluded to, versus the stock market is a great analogy. And, you know, the teams are just not going to do that. They're going to give themselves an out. And that's why they put the transitional tag on.
Yeah, I think you're right.
As the one player that has a chance. I think that they negotiated right up until the very, very end with Jones before they got him under contract. And really they had no room or no time to make an adjustment as far as Barkley was concerned. I still think that the Giants are going to give Barkley, I don't know how long a term contract they're going to give him, but I think he is going to be signed. I'll be surprised if he isn't.
Yeah, I'm right there with you on that, Don. And Roger, I agree with you 100%. The reason the NFL is in this situation is the Deshaun Watson contract. You know, here's a guy who was a great player for a couple of years, really went afoul of the league and everything else. And you know, Cleveland comes out and gives him this ridiculous contract, absolutely ridiculous contract for a player who can't be relied on at this point. You know, hadn't played
in a year
and a half. Right, couldn't play. Hadn't played in a year and a half, couldn't play for a half a year. And they give him this ridiculous contract, and it's blown up the market. It's put quarter, you know, what it's doing, and Lamar Jackson is a very good example. It's taking players of, you know, and Lamar Jackson's a very good quarterback. Granted, he's never won a Super Bowl. He hasn't, in fact, he's, what, 1-8 in the playoffs or something like that. So, you know, he's not very good in the clutch, it seems, or when it really matters. And now he's, in essence, saying, well, okay, I'm worth the $40-plus million too. And, you know, look, I've never been one to, you know, say that players shouldn't get the money that's being offered. I get every penny you can. Good for them. Happy for them. But I will say this. When you're not paying Patrick Mahomes, you know, Patrick Mahomes money, or you're not paying, or if you're paying somebody, you know, who's not in Patrick Mahomes league as a quarterback, Patrick Mahomes money, you're making a mistake. And you're kind of forced into it because that's the market, but somehow you got to correct the market. And I think that's what this is all about, as I said.
Well, I think one of the unfortunate things, Roger, is that there's not that many teams. You talk about Baltimore and Jackson. They don't have any cap room. You know, you talk about the Buccaneers here in Tampa. They don't have any cap. Look at the team. The Giants don't have any really bargaining area there where they got a lot of money to spend. You know, these teams are running short on the cap.
Well, I think it's almost every team. I mean, there's very few teams that have a lot of wiggle room versus the cap. And I know the Eagles have to unload a number of players. I heard the, you know, one thought was that they may bring back a couple of, like Brandon Graham and a couple of those. They may bring them back, but on a totally different structured contract, you know, so that he can still, if they want to play another year, great. If not, you know, move on. But the, you know, some of these for like a defensive lineman, excuse me, making $14 million a year, it's going to be take a very special player to get a price like that or a contract like that, especially, you know, if you're trying to build a team for this year and for the couple of years in the future.
Roy,
you know,
two points with the Buccaneers. You've covered them since day one. They're in a situation right now with the cap space, but also, you know, at least you can say to their fans, all right, we won a Super Bowl 3 years ago. We're in the playoffs 2 years in a row. We had a very competitive team. But now you're in a situation between the cap and the players you're going to have to move off the roster. You're going to go a couple of years really scratching the bottom of the barrel.
Yeah, as I said in my response to your first question about the situation they're in, you're right. They are going to have to scrape the bottom of the barrel because they can't afford to bring in, I mean, they can't afford to go after Lamar Jackson. They can't afford to have that conversation with Lamar Jackson because they can't afford the quarterback. They've got so much dead money on their payroll right now that it's going to be 2 years before they can really pay the kind of salaries that will attract the top-level players. So they're going to be forced to build through the draft for a couple of years, and it's just going to be really some really lean times. I think they're an example of you know, just kind of where we're at in the NFL right now, where if you go a little bit too far with signing too many high-priced veterans, if they're late in their career, like an Aaron Rodgers, I mean, that's something that the Jets have got to think about. It seems like they're willing to certainly pay him, but at the end of the day, you know, if he retires here in the next couple of years, or, you know, decides to retire next year, I should say, they're going to be hit with a big cap number, and it's going to be hard for them to recover from that. And you know, we talked about, you know, the money with the quarterbacks and stuff. You know, we're at a point now where the quarterback is making almost a fifth of what the salary cap is. Salary cap at $220 plus million is tremendous. I'm not, you know, I think we all probably saw it coming at some point because of the popularity of the league and the way it's all designed. But right now, if one player is making a fifth of that, well, you're supposed to have, you know, 45, you know, 43 or 44 other players. Well, what are you going to do? I mean, how are you going to pay him? It doesn't give you much room to have star caliber players at other positions, particularly wide receiver, defensive end, running back. You know, you just can't have it. Maybe even cornerback, or as you said, I mean, as Roger pointed out, you got $14-15 million offensive lineman now. It's hard to keep guys like that when you're paying the quarterback $40 plus million. So, again, it's I think the NFL is headed for an interesting period, and possibly a difficult period in terms of trying to keep rosters together. And I'm not sure that the free agency is going to be the cash haul that a lot of players have once received from it. Some teams will be able to pay the money, but it'll be teams that are barely playoff contenders. You know, kind of like Arizona going after J.J. Watt. Well, Arizona could afford him because they didn't have anything else. But
right.
At the end of the day, was it really a good move for J.J. Watt to go to Arizona? Not if he was trying to win a Super Bowl, no.
Well, they gave Tyler Murray a lot of
Rodgers,
money.
With Aaron Rodgers, and I agree with you. We talked about it last week. We've talked about it a few weeks in a row. You know, it's great to say the ownership and the general manager and everybody in the front office, the coach, are going to fly out on a private jet to talk to Aaron Rodgers. But, you know, what do you do? Are you going to sign it for 1 year and hope that the young quarterback that did not develop this year as they anticipated is going to develop sitting on the bench behind Aaron Rodgers? Or is he even going to entertain that, Roger?
Well, yeah. The other thing is that the people say, well, you know, a quarterback ought to be like Tom Brady, and sacrifice some of his money to bring the roster up to a championship level. Well, that's true. I mean, I understand that point. However, Tom Brady had and was in a different era at the beginning of his career, but he made a lot of money early on too. And he was willing to sacrifice that because he knew that they would probably win the Super Bowls, and which they did, and moving on from there. But that you get a young quarterback, and I'm thinking about Jalen Hurts. Okay, he's going to want, just like Lamar Jackson, wants the big contract now while he's young. Now, 5 years from now, he may think differently. But I really think that there's going to be a lot of guaranteed upfront money where they can spread it out more. What do you fellas think about that rather than, you know, like the longer-term contract?
Roy?
Yeah, I think it's the only way to go right now, the way the system is. You're right. You've got to pack it all up front and try to get out of it early and in terms of the guaranteed money. But still, and you got to hope that the player sticks around for a while. You know, you got to make sure that, yeah, it doesn't get hurt. Exactly. What you said about Tom Brady is accurate, though. I mean, it'd be nice if, you know, more quarterbacks would you know, take less money to, you know, so that the players around them could get more, and you can get better players around you. So that's the better way to, you know, I think that model is clear and evident that it works. I mean, it certainly worked in New England. It worked in Tampa. But the issue there is, guys, and we all know this, Tom Brady was a unique, you know, situation. His wife was a supermodel who made more money than he did. So from a family standpoint, he didn't have to make $32 million when he was worth $32 million. He didn't have to make, you know, $40 million when he was worth $40 million. He could take $28 million and and let, you know, and spread the wealth a little bit among his team, amongst his teammates. That makes sense because, but you know, Lamar Jackson, who's trying to cash in for, you know, what could be the only time in his career, really, can't do that. Patrick Mahomes certainly isn't in that situation. So, you know, it's unique. And again, you just, you know, some players, you know, Derek Carr, he can maybe take a little bit less because he's made some money, probably very happy with where he's at financially and realizes where he is in his career. But not many quarterbacks, especially the young ones, can do that, and obviously it can be you know, detrimental to the building of your team.
Well, Chris Wheeler standing by. We're going to be talking baseball and the Phillies in just a couple of seconds. But one last thing, Roy. I think the other thing about Brady was that he was willing to take the extra money because he wanted to play on a winner. And he knew, if you don't have players around me, I'm not going to win. And he was willing to make the sacrifice, not only for the money, but for the good of the operation to keep the New England Patriots a winning football team.
Absolutely. It's a great point. You're right. And I don't think you are either, Don. I don't think we're suggesting that there aren't players out there that want to win. They do want to win, and I think they're willing to sacrifice. But, you know, you also got to think of your family first and yourself first. And, yeah, you think about your team as well. But, you know, it's kind of like, hey, this is what I've earned. This is what the market is. And don't forget, agents are so big on someone now has to, you know, set that new bar of what it's going to be, so that everybody else can get can get more money, and that's a big part of it too. Agents are in the ears of these players saying, hey, you can't take $5 million less because we need you to set the bar here for the, you know, for your caliber of player. You got to think about, you know, all your brethren in the NFLPA here too. So that's a big part of it as well. And it's just there's a lot of factors involved. A lot of factors.
And Roy, once again, a great first half hour. Thank you so very, very much. And we'll jump right in next week.
Roy,
and we'll have all
week.
These problems solved. I know we have all the answers, so we can go from there.
Right.
glad to be a part of it as always, guys. Thanks for having me.
Take care, Roy. Have a great week.
All right, we'll jump right down from football and all the contract negotiations and the problems going on there to one of our best friends, and that's Chris Wheeler, who's with the Phillies for so many years as their broadcaster, along with a great team of people that worked. We talked about what happened here with the Rays this week, this weekend, with losing one of their broadcasters. Well, the Phillies went through that with a few broadcasters, with Chris Wheeler at the helm as well. And Chris, first of all, welcome to the show again, and thank you very much for taking some time. And number one, out of the chute, you've seen a number of games because you're at the Philly games. What do you think of the new rules?
Wow, Don. First of all, thanks. It's nice to talk to you, too. You and I go way back, and it's a pleasure to be on the show with you, obviously. You know what? I think it has potential. I've seen base hits now that wouldn't have been hits without the shift, and I like that. I think there's still a work in progress with the clock, trying to get everybody used to it. But, yeah, you know, it does seem to move. Look, I've tried to be one of these people that, you know, I'm 77 years old and I'm supposed to be a dinosaur and a fossil and all that. But I've tried to always look at it in the way of what's best for the game and what's best to try and get people to watch it or go to it or care about it. And I think that's what they're trying to do right now, and we have to cut them some slack and see what happens. But I haven't been turned off by anything. I think it has a lot of potential, what they're trying to do.
Roger Hendler's in Atlantic. Go to it, Roger.
Chris, always a pleasure. I was just found the cassette I did with all of your associates on the tribute to Harold A. Bus Sate when he passed away. Shows you how old that is.
Wow.
But anyway,
I'll
tell you, Chris, Don and Frank, now we were talking about it earlier. I have been to high school games every night this week. And I got to tell you, it is just great to see young talent and how talented these young players are. And anybody that says baseball is just for old folks is crazy. Because I see it, and now they got this game changer where tonight a teacher that I, you know, that's a teacher where I sub, she's tracking her freshman son who's playing over in Woodstock. And while we're there watching the sophomore or the son play JV. So, I mean, I think baseball is really coming alive if it ever died. And I know in Philadelphia it didn't, because that was evidence after where the Phillies run. But, you know, what do you think about, you know, there's a lot of young talent, and I just, when you see it at high schools, it's really encouraging.
Well, the thing is, you have to get your stars, and you have to get your stars and market them. I mean, the NBA is the greatest at that, in my opinion. You know, they take 5, 10, 15 guys and market the heck out of them and make that league now so that people care about it and watch the games and love the postseason and it in the playoffs and all that sort of stuff. And we've never really done a great job of that, and I can't explain that why. I think they're trying to do more things with it because we have so many dynamic young people in the game playing the game right now on a star level, and to try and do something to get their personalities out there and have the kids enjoy it. And I think that's what part of this rule change is. We needed a little more action in the game. You know, people like us are fine with the game. We love it. But the nowadays, you know, a lot of people have the attention span of a field mouse. And you really need something to hook them, to pull them in, to draw them in. And I think some of this has a chance. There's going to be more action in the game because there's going to be more offense because there's more openings to shoot balls through and those kind of things. And, you know, how it works out, whether the pitchers think this is to their advantage or the hitters do, I think overall it's going to make the game better because it's going to move along a little better.
I have to agree 100%. I saw the sixth spring training game today. Pittsburgh was over here. And I'll tell you, I like the way they've run the clock. I like the 2 minutes. I don't know that the 2 minutes is going to continue once the regular season starts because of commercial time. You know better than I would about that, Chris. But whether that 2 minutes is going to become 3.5 or 3:45 or whatever it may turn out to be. But I do like the 20 seconds. I like the 15 seconds. I like the fact that the players, and I thought Pat Williams made a great point with me. I did a show with Pat last night, and Pat said, we finally got the Ivy Leaguers out of the front office and got baseball people back in. The game's come back to earth.
Well, look, Pat Williams is a good friend of all of ours. I love that guy, like you guys do. And, you know, he always has good ideas about things. You know, he's still going to have a lot of Ivy Leaguers around. Yeah, that's kind of the way it's going. There are a lot of guys looking through screens now the way they used to, sitting behind home plate and evaluating. But, I just want to give them a chance. You know, everybody, wait, relax. Let them try it and admit when there's a problem that some things have to be done, and this is where they're going with it right now, and we'll see what happens. And early on, as you just said, watching today, and early on, in my opinion, I've seen, you know, like 6 or 7 home games now here. I think it's got a chance to help the game, and that's what we're trying to do.
Oh, I agree 100%. Roger, before I make my next point, go to it.
Yeah, well, I got a call from a friend of mine, I guess, what was it, last week, that you were back in the broadcast booth filling in for a game last week. Isn't that right, Chris?
No, I don't know who that was.
He told me it was you.
Well, you know, there's a lot of misinformation out there. All you got to do is, well, never mind. But
I understand. I'll tell him.
But tell him thank you. I'm doing the PA, you know, and some days with all the announcements, it sounds like I'm on the air with all the announcements that we do and stuff. But tell him I appreciate that, and there's no way I want to be back on the air. I'm loving life.
Chris, let's talk about the present club, because a little bit of a bad break with Harper. We knew it was coming. He's going to be July probably or whatever before he can, really be playing full-time baseball once again. And some of your observations of the trades and the moves they made. They made a great run in the second half, got all the way to the big games, and your thoughts about where they come out of spring training this year and where they are.
Well, you brought up Harper, Don, and, you know, it's a plus and a minus on the whole thing. Obviously, he's not around right now, and we're not going to have him until, as you say, the All-Star break. But you know what? The Phillies caught a break last year with the DH coming in because when he hurt that elbow in April, that would have been the end of him. And they were able to get a full season out of this guy as a DH. And, you know, the rest is history. The way he took off at points during the season, especially during the postseason. And, you know, what great players do is they take off in the postseason, and that's what he was able to do. So, you know, it was going to have to be done sooner or later to have the operation. But do the Phillies do what they do last year and go to the playoffs and World Series and all that without him? I don't think so. I don't think so without his bat in the lineup with the things that he did. And it's so hard that right now we're so early in spring training with the World Baseball Classic coming up. We're losing a lot of players. You know, it's one of the good things when you have stars. You know, you got to share them with the world, and that's what they're doing. They're going to have to do right now. So it's really hard to evaluate this team. But to see Trey Turner in person, you know, I didn't do his games. He came in after I started doing games live where you could see the whole field. You know, all you would see is him go pop up sliding into a bag or flying around a bag or something like that. Man, when you watch him from up high now and the way he glides around the bases and the things he can do, that's just a great signing that Dave Dombrowski and John Middleton made to bring that guy to Philadelphia. And I think he's just going to – well, he's always excelled no matter where he plays, but I think he's going to love playing in Philadelphia with the atmosphere that we have.
I pretty much have to agree with that. And also the ballpark. I think he's going to love the ballpark as well.
Oh, yeah. You know, he can beat you with a little dribbler in the infield and then steal second. Or he can hit a ball 400 feet. I mean, this guy's a freak in nature. He really is. You know, defensively, he's not the greatest defensive shortstop in Major League Baseball right now, but he's pretty good. And, he's been working a lot with Bobby Dickerson, Larry Boa down here during spring training and all, and they see some things in him that they want him to do a little bit differently and all. And he's evidently very coachable. But this guy is just a fabulous athlete. And I just love watching him run when he gets on base.
Roger?
Well, you know, talking about Bryce Harper, Chris, you know, not only did he have a big influence on the field, but off the field in the locker room. And I think a lot of it was about being able to bring, bring the several players to the Phillies. And I'm big on some of these prospects. I think Stott's going to be really a very good player. I guess they still don't know about Andrew Painter's elbow. The results aren't back. They were talking about it on MLB radio. And the question and a couple of the announcers were saying is, if the three top teams, the Braves, the Mets, and the Phillies, and with the all three have injuries to a major contributor starting pitcher, and they felt that the Braves with Wright was the one they got to worry about the most, and they felt that the Phillies starting quartet, but you know when you have five. They felt that they have enough to carry it because they really don't think that Painter would be pitching that much until later in the season. What do you think about that point?
I agree with that. You know, I think it was just kind of, something to talk about, oh, maybe he's going to come out of camp as your fifth starter. He's 19 years old and all that. I don't know what's going on with his elbow. You know, you cross your fingers when you hear somebody have an elbow problem. And nowadays, you know, you feel a little twinge, anything at all, and they shut you down because the guys are worth so much money and you put so much of an investment in them. You're talking about Harper and what he did for the Phillies. The thing that he did, you know, besides what he does on the field and everything, the thing that you alluded to about bringing guys to the club, Kyle Schwarber is a man in that clubhouse. This guy, you know what he can do on the field, and you've seen what he can do on the field throughout his career. He did, from what I was told, the most amazing job in that clubhouse of just keeping it light and not taking yourself too serious. You know, he'll strike out four times and just kind of shake his head like, eh, you know, one of those nights. The world's not ending. You know, you play a lot of games, you go out. And the best thing he did last year, from what I was told, early in the season when Alec Bohm had that problem, when he was shown on camera saying, you know, I bleep and hate this place. Well, I've heard a lot of players say that about Philadelphia, that they bleep and hate this place. But they didn't get caught right on the camera with you, you know, when you're saying it. And he handled it so perfectly. And now they love him, and he's become a much better player. But the thing was, when I was told, Schwarber took charge of that thing and really, really made him face the music on it. And he understood what it's like in Philadelphia, and you got to do this now. And nip it in the bud, he did. And, boy, he's gone on to become a heck of a player throughout last year. And watching him in spring training this year, he's stronger, and he's going to hit more home runs.
Boy, he hit a double to left center field on Monday afternoon, and then he hit a home run again to left center field, line drive over left center field fence. And he put good swings on the one half. I've only seen him play one game. You've seen him play five or six. But I'll tell you, I also think that he's getting more and more confident at third base as he goes along. The other point was that Larry Boas said during the offseason when he joined us was he thought that Atlanta lost the best shortstop of all, the four big-time shortstops in terms of defense was concerned, and he thought that might hurt the Braves a little bit.
Yeah, he and I have talked about that too. He's a big Dansby Swanson guy. That's the guy you're talking about, of course, who's now with the Cubs, who they did not try to sign. And it was interesting, too, because they've done such a great job of signing their younger players to long-term deals, and they just basically let him go, whether they think they can replace him with some of those kids they had last year. We'll find out. But that guy is a heck of a shortstop and a very dangerous offensive player, too. So, you know, we'll see. The Braves are doing an awful good job in their farm system of bringing guys up to the big leagues that play at a high level. So maybe they feel that they can do that. Maybe they feel they can do that again. But I like Swanson, too. And, you know, when Bo talks about somebody's defense, you have a tendency to listen because he has a pretty good idea about that. And he thinks, look, I've seen Bohm improve last season, and he's very confident in spring training with his defense. You know, you're not going to talk about him as one of the great third basemen ever, I don't think. But he's so big that he has to had to learn. By big, I mean tall. He had to learn to do some things to control his body better down there. He has a very strong arm, and it's a matter of him getting in position to field the baseball and then throw. And he looks like he's much more confident. And, man, what you mentioned, Don, that ball's jumping off his bat this spring. He's, you know, he used to be kind of an opposite field fly ball line drive hitter. Oof, he's pulled some balls this spring, and they're loud when he hits them.
Roger?
Well, I'll tell you, he was great at the sports writers dinner, Chris, and got to talk to him at the reception. Yeah. And then Larry Litwin, you know, asked him a number of questions, but he was very relaxed and just a pleasure to talk to. I mean, you know, he's just a classy young guy. That's the only thing I can say. And he is developing very quickly now.
Well, and at a key position, too, you know, third bases. You need somebody at third base. Obviously, they have to be able to play the position and field it, but you want them to have some pop. And he has the chance to have pop, especially the way baseball is with home runs and the way the ball flies. And you're right about him. He was great last year during all the postseason when they were doing all the interviews. Nobody looked like they were having more fun than Alec Bohm. And when you think what happened early in the season in that Mets game when he was shown on TV saying that, and what could have happened, if that could have been the end of it, gone as far as Philadelphia goes, and it totally, totally turned around, and you have to give him a lot of credit. But as I said again, they told me Schwarber really did a great job in helping him get through that. And that's the kind of veteran players you need.
Chris, almost right away. I mean, he did it the next day. Yeah. You know, he came out and you know, he turned the tide within 24 hours, not a week or two, 24
he
hours.
He said all the right things after the game, Don, on camera to the print media. And Joe Girardi was a manager at that time. He didn't start him the next night, but he pinch hit him in the game. They gave him a standing ovation when he came out as a pinch hitter because he had said all the right things. And there's so much media nowadays, everybody hears it, or their friends tell them what he had said. So they were ready to bury him the next night. But when he did all the things that he did, they loved him that day. You know, Vuk used to tell me all the time, you know, they try to bury in Philadelphia and see how you react. And if you react wrong, they'll crack you and break you. And if you don't, they'll love you for the rest of your life. I think that's kind of what happened. Once again, old Johnny had a good point.
Well, the other
thing
is
the one thing
I'd
like to see, and in the game the other day on Monday, you know, defense was really their problem through three quarters of last year. They just made too many errors, struck out too much, made too many errors, and took themselves out of games. You know, even the other day, they made what the kids had, was Gage in left field? Who was in left field?
Gage. I saw one, his name. I think that's probably
he made one outstanding diving catch, but he gets up, runners on first and second, and throws the ball away, and then they wind up with runners on second and third instead of first and second after he makes the catch at short center field. And same thing with a runner on first base, goes first to third, he throws the third base instead of throwing a second, gives up the double play. Not that it made any difference because the third out came along anyway. They didn't score. But, I mean, those kinds of things you can't do when it really counts.
Amen.
Well,
I've always been a defense guy, a pitching and defense guy. And
me too.
And, you know, I think they've done a good job in the back of their bullpen this year. I think on paper anyway, we'll see what happens when the season starts. But defensively, you can't give teams 4 and 5 outs. If you do, you lose. And they were a very poor defensive team last year. But in the playoffs, they were not. They came along,
right.
And in the playoffs, they caught the ball and did the things that they had to do without giving up a lot of cheap runs, and it was one of the reasons why they were able to win.
Well, Chris, I want to thank you very, very much, as always, for being with us, and wait a few weeks, get into the regular season, and see what you think about the rule changes, see what you think about. I want to talk a little bit about the bullpen, but we didn't have enough time tonight. But thank you so very, very much for joining us.
My pleasure, Don, Roger. You guys
always
are friends
pleasure,
for a long
Chris.
Time. Yeah, anytime I can do it, I'm sorry I had a couple of weeks where I couldn't do it. I had to go to Memphis for Timmy's funeral and all that. So we got back here and got underway, and everything's good right now. So we'll be in touch.
Thanks so much.
Absolutely. Take care.
Well, let me bring Roger back in here now because a good friend of his, Fred Galea, is going to be our next guest as we go down to Atlanta, Georgia, and Athens, Georgia. And, Roger, bring them on.
Fred, I'll tell you, I was telling friends I was over at West Forsyth watching the JV baseball team against Woodstock last night, Flowery Branch. I'm hooked on this high school baseball, let me tell you. And I know you were really busy last week with the Carter situation at Georgia, and really unfortunate the night that they won the national championship a couple of days. But on what's happened, and boy, I'll tell you what, you're the new Atlanta News First, ANF, boy, I'll tell you, it's taken the city by storm.
Well, Roger, we appreciate it, man. You know, we've been working really hard, and what happened with Jalen Carter, those two young staffers, I mean, that was just awful, awful, awful news, and a tough way. Obviously, Georgia was just celebrating a national championship, and then to have that happen on the heels of that was just awful, just awful news. I just feel terrible for all the families involved.
Fred, I'd like to ask you this, too. You covered Green Bay for a long period of time before you went down to take care of things in Atlanta, but what do you think of the Rodgers situation as it continues to grow?
I'm sorry, which situation?
Rodgers.
No, you know what? You're thinking Daryl Ledbetter was at Green Bay.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, you were right.
Okay,
I apologize.
Fred played at Indiana in football as a walk-on. So
I did. For Lee Corso. That's right. Lee Corso.
For Lee
was my
Corso.
Head coach.
Yeah. But, talking about, let's get to the Falcons since we're talking about football a little bit. What do you think is their biggest need in the draft, Fred?
Quarterback.
Yeah.
Every team's got that problem.
I hate to say that, but I mean, it's quarterback, really. You know, I mean, that's, you know, they need a quarterback. They don't have a, I mean, Desmond Ridder is a good quarterback, but he's not a franchise guy, I don't think. You know, and, you know, whether people like it or not, Matt Ryan was a franchise guy. Maybe he wasn't at the end, but, you know, for a lot of years he was. And, you know, they probably need to build that offensive line back up, too. I mean, they're missing a piece or two on that offensive line. I think that would really help them because then they'd be able to, I know it sounds like an old man, but they'd be able to run the football, chew the clock, and stay in these games.
How do they stand against the cap? How do they stand against the cap?
Well, they're not in good shape against the cap. They've got to figure that out. So they need to figure that out and see what they can do there. Maybe they have to make some trades or make some deals, but we'll see what happens. But that's just my opinion.
Roger.
You know, Fred, that is a good point about the running game. You know, when you think about Mike Smith's tenure and with Michael Turner and then also with Obi Muhaly, you know, they had the running game, and then you had Matt Ice, you know, there early on from his rookie year, and we never realized what a great – period of time that was for the Falcons. I mean, they were in it every year, at least in the playoffs, and then they could have won that NFC championship, you know, and of course Dan Quinn did get to the Super Bowl. But I mean, they had a great running game with those two guys and the line. And that's what they need. I agree with you. Go ahead.
Well, they did. I mean, you know, you have an offensive line. I don't care what level of football, you're going to control the game. I don't care if it's high school. I don't care if it's college. If it's the pros, you got a good offensive line, you're going to control the game because you'll be able to do what you want on offense. And I think
the point being that you mentioned quarterback, and that's one of the things that's really hamstringing most of the teams now because they're spending so much money for a quarterback. They just don't have enough money to pay everybody else the numbers of dollars they have to be competitive.
Well, I mean, that's, you know, it's amazing to try to work the cap and the way to work it. That's a job. And they do have people that do it, but that's got to be the toughest job in football. I don't care what team it is, trying to manipulate the cap and work in your favor.
Yeah,
I agree.
You know, we were talking about the Braves earlier with Chris Wheeler, and talking about Dansby Swanson, and probably if not one of the best one of the best shortstops in baseball, but the Braves didn't really attempt to re-sign him, and obviously went with the Cubs. Do you feel the Braves have the talent to take over really key position, Fred?
Well, I think you're going to see Vaughn Grissom there, and Vaughn Grissom is, you know, he showed us a glimpse of what the Braves expect to see from him, and I think he's a guy, if you can put him at short, you know, he's a big guy, a rangy guy, put him at short, and Elizzi stays at second. I think that the Braves are going to be okay there. Yeah, I think they'll be fine. I really do.
Fred, the one thing the Braves have done consistently is develop players at the minor leagues and especially bringing up some very dominant young players. But now they've got a roster where they've had extended signings. I mean, they look to me like they're in the best shape of any team in the National League over the next 5 years.
At least, you know, Alex Anthopoulos did a great job locking up guys in today's money. So, I mean, it's really, these guys are, they're making a lot of money now. Like Michael Harris is making a lot of money now, but he won't be by the time, you know, he's in his prime, you know,
right.
He'll be making good money, but that locked the Braves in to really a lot of these young guys. And you know, Roger will remember this. There was a group of baby Braves back in 2005 that won it all. And guys like Brian McCann and, you know, Nick Green from Gwinnett County and some other guys. And this is kind of like that again. You've got this young team that are kind of taking over. They got some veterans mixed in there. They got really good pitching, and it's kind of they're trying to run it back and try it again. And I think that they'll be successful. They have been successful. Of course, they won a World Series, what, 2 years ago. So, I mean, it hasn't been that long ago.
Roger. Well, I was out at the boat show at Lanier all weekend and talking to people and getting back to Matt. Do you think that he's going to play anywhere this year? The reason was that some of the people I was talking to live in Sugarloaf. And I guess he sold his house there and or at least, moved and obviously. But, I hope – I don't know whether he would want to be a backup and or whether he really wants to pack it in. Do you talk to him at all, Fred?
I haven't talked to him in a while, no. And I haven't talked to him about that. But that would be – he doesn't want to be a backup. And I don't blame him. I mean, the guy's been an elite quarterback for a long time. In the NFL and took a team to the Super Bowl.
Hall of Fame numbers in many ways, Fred.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it wasn't his fault. I mean, he built the 28-3 lead. He didn't let it get away. I mean,
right.
So he's been a good quarterback for a long time. And, you got to have an offensive line. And that dude took so many shots in his last years in Atlanta. He took so many shots and got hit so hard. I mean, I really think that kind of slowed him down tremendously, and I think that's why he wasn't as good as he was the last couple of years, because I mean that dude got hit a lot.
He did. And
Fred,
let's go back
to shortstop for a second, because I talked to Larry Bowe a number of times on our show here in the off season. Larry thought he was the best shortstop of the four dynamic shortstops that were available. He thought he was the best defensive player and total player of the four players. I can't understand why they never really tried to renegotiate with him. They renegotiated with everybody, but they really didn't make even after the other three were gone, they still didn't make a move to re-sign him.
Well, I mean, they thought they believed they have his replacement.
Okay.
They believe that they've got the guy of the future in Vaughn Grissom.
Yeah.
Can't argue with that. They're right on everything they do, so I guess they're going to be right on this one, too.
They've been, Alex Anthopoulos has been running the hot hand. He's on a heater. So, I mean, I mean, Freddie Freeman had a great year last year, and I'm sure Dansby Swanson's going to have a great year, too. I mean, look, we like those guys. I mean, I don't think they're popular in Atlanta. And I think they'll always be popular in Atlanta. I mean, Dansby grew up here, and the Braves made the deal to get him. So, different people, but now, they made a deal to, send him along. And he's going to succeed in Chicago and have a good time and have, a good career there, I think.
Oh, that ballpark's built for him, too.
Yeah, it was Freddie Freeman, how emotional he was when the reunion last summer, and you thought he was going to be a lifetime Brave, but the Braves are a good organization, just like you were saying, Don. And I mean, they know what they're doing. I mean, they don't make many mistakes, let me tell you.
No, he had Matt. I mean, Alex Anthopoulos. He didn't hear from Freddie. Boom, he went out and got Matt Olson, who's been great.
Yeah,
and he's a local guy.
That was a strong move. That was really a strong move. Let's run down the pitching a little bit, Fred. What do you think about the depth and the quality of the pitching as well as going to the bullpen?
The starting pitching is not as deep as I'd like. I think they're probably, three deep, you think? Three, four deep?
Yeah.
We're spoiled. We're spoiled in Atlanta. So,
yeah.
I mean, Wright, Ian Anderson, who else you got over there? You got Charlie Morton.
Yeah, he's going to come through at least with innings. And I really am a Charlie Morton guy. I always have been.
Yeah.
The one concern I heard on MLB radio today was about Wright. Is it a rib problem that he has?
I haven't heard that. I'll have to check it out, Roger. I promise you, I haven't heard that. I've been locked up doing some other things.
Well,
here, so I really,
know, it may not be serious, but their comparison was, if you look at the Mets and the Phillies and the Braves with the starting, say, quartet,
right.
they felt that the right situation versus, well, with the Phillies, it's Andrew Painter, you know, the rookie, 19 years old.
Right, yeah.
But they were saying that they felt that the right situation was having the biggest impact on the one of the teams in that three, you know, versus like Scherzer and you know,
right,
with the Mets. Okay. And so I was just, you know, wondering, and I think what they said was it's something with a rib. You know, I don't know.
Heard a pitcher.
I mean, and you know, maybe hopefully it's not serious, because I'll mm-hmm. tell you, he would 21 game winner last year. You don't find many.
A lot of 20 game winners anymore, you know, because of the bullpen
anymore.
And the innings and the analytics and all that stuff, you know, and, you know, they try to save guys' arms and try to, you know, do different things. It's not.
Fred, what do you think of the new? What do you think of the new rules?
I don't like them.
That's pretty clear.
Well, I mean, you know, if I hit the ball to shortstop every time, why can't they have a couple guys over there? That's my fault. You know, if I can't spray the ball where I want it, that's my fault. You know, as a hitter, so why can't they? That's like saying, okay, if I'm on the football field and they come out in a Twins formation, I can't put an extra guy over on that side to cover him. I got to stay in my base coverage.
Right.
To me, it's like, no, I know you put a guy out there because you want to throw to him. So why can't I play over there? I know that this guy always hits the short. Why can't I play an extra guy over there?
What do you think about the clock?
Well, you know what? Actually, I do like the clock. You know, let's get it going. I mean, of course, you're talking to a guy. You know, Roger remembers this too. We remember Greg Maddux. You know, it's like, you better be ready because he's coming right back at you.
That's right.
You know,
I've seen six games here in Sarasota so far with Baltimore, and not one of those six games, five and a half innings, was more than an hour and a half. That was the most. The most was an hour and a half.
That's great, isn't it?
Oh,
yeah.
All the difference in the world. To me, it's unbelievable. And as I said, they adhere to the 2 minutes on going in and out between innings. They adhere to the 20-second clock. They adhere to the 15-second clock. They keep the thing going. I mean, I said this last week, I'm not necessarily in favor of the ghost runner in the 10th inning, but, hey, that's minor compared to everything else. I think what they've done is really brought, you know, I said this in the last half hour to Chris Wheeler. Pat Williams said, I did a show with Pat Williams earlier this week, and Pat said he took the guys out of the Ivy League, and put the baseball people back in business. And I think he's exactly right. They're getting away from all these statistics.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sorry, I missed that last comment you cut out. You talking about the Ivy League or something?
Yeah.
I missed
the
last.
Ivy
League.
It was with the in baseball,
analytics.
Get rid of the Ivy Leaguers, you know, and get back to the pure
fans. Yeah. Right.
They're the ones
that
dreamed up all this analytics.
Yeah, I don't want to go to calculus class. I want to play baseball.
Right.
You know, shit.
Right.
I mean, come on. Shoot. Let's play baseball. And
right.
Like I said, with the shift, I mean, that's, you know, that's got, if I owe Roger $50, I'm going to take a different way to the ballpark. So if he knows that and he can find me, hey, you owe me $50. Why can't he do that? You know? He's like, wait a minute. No. Roger, you can't come this way. You knew I was going to walk this way, but you can't come this way. Huh? This bugs the daylights out of me. I'm sorry. I really am.
I'll tell you, I told Don last week, Fred, I was at the one of the games, you know, at West of Forsyth. And I got to tell you, 3 hours, seven-inning game, and I'll tell you, it didn't seem like 3 hours, you know? You're there, you're with friends, you're talking about to parents, you know, it's a different world, you know, I mean, and you get to enjoy it, okay, I mean, it's, I just can't believe I hadn't seen a high school game.
But Roger, you're not watching
while.
It on TV. You're not watching it
no,
on TV,
you're
Roger. You're there, as you said, talking to friends, enjoying the atmosphere of being in the ballpark. You're not sitting at home watching a game on TV that's going 3 hours and 45 minutes. You can't do it.
I agree. With 5-minute commercials, every half inning. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Sure. You gotta have those.
Yeah, it was funny, Fred. I heard the other night watching MLB Network, they had the Cardinals game on. Boy, I'll tell you, it sounded so funny to hear Chip Carey doing the Cardinals, after the Braves for so many years.
Yeah, I talked to him about that, and, he did do the Braves for a long time. And I think, after Skip passed away, I know that was probably tough on him, and I know that, even though they weren't that close at the beginning, I think they might have gotten closer there toward the end. And I think that, Chip probably just felt, hey, you know what? It's time to move on. Let's try something new while I'm young enough to do it. And, following Harry's footsteps like that, because he already did that with the Cubs, right? And then he came here to be with his dad. And so now he can, he's done the family triangle now.
Well,
he went with a great franchise, too.
Look, St. Louis is a baseball town. They're a baseball town. They don't have NFL, and they don't care.
Yeah. No, you're exactly right. And that Mid-America on KMOX, boy, that signal goes how many states, Don, and Canada?
38 in Canada.
We used to listen to it in Indiana,
Like, no question about that. They covered everything.
Scott Rowland. Scott Rowland, the Cardinal, great, right? I mean, he ended up playing a lot of years with the Cardinals. Great, great player from Jasper, Indiana. Okay, that's southeastern Indiana. That's all Cardinals country in there before he ever went there. I mean, even when I was a little kid, that was all Cardinals, that part of Indiana. All Cardinals, Indiana, all through there.
Did you see him as a Hall of Famer?
And no, I got to be. Even though he's an Indiana guy and he went to IU and played at IU, he's not. To me, I mean, he doesn't. I don't know. They're letting guys in.
I think he's a very, very good player, very well gifted player, had all the tools, 5-tool player. But I think he falls a little short as far as the Hall of Fame is concerned. But hey, that's only me. Roger, you're up.
Well, he was, and he started out with the Phillies, and he was never happy in Philadelphia, and the fans let him know about it. But he went in as a Cardinal, or is going in as a Cardinal, and I think the other problem that he had was he followed Mike Schmidt, it's the old story. You don't want to be the guy to follow the legend. You want to be the guy to follow the guy that followed the legend. That old expression.
Right.
And I think that really had an effect because, Schmitty was there, Hall of Famer. They won a World Series, and the fans were expecting this. I think he could be a Hall of Famer, or you can look at it both sides, about in and out. That's the way I look at it. But he's in, and he deserves it. And, congratulations to him. That's the way I look at it.
Right, yeah.
Well, I just look at it as about selecting Hall of Fame players because, I mean, we saw Dick Allen for how many years? And look at his numbers, look at his career, and he didn't even get in with the veterans. He didn't even get in with the veterans. He missed
one
vote last year in the veterans committee.
Yes.
And, you're talking, look, you put Scott Rowland up against Dick Allen, and Dick Allen's not in. You're talking apples and oranges.
Very true. But look at the world, today. I mean, it's totally different in a short period of time than it was, 5-10 years ago even, so.
Yeah.
Well, listen, Fred, it's always wonderful.
Hey, guys, thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
It's always fun to chat.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, I love that Atlanta News First. I mean, it is great.
All right. We love it, man. Thanks for watching us.
Okay.
We need the help.
Take care. God bless,
bye-bye.
Fred.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
All righty. I didn't hear you, Frank, but my father, the phone rang, and I was turning it off.
Yeah,
Mike's ready. Is Mike ready? Okay.
Yes, sir.
Mike, let me get you up. I'm sorry. I apologize, Mike. For some reason, I forgot to turn the other phone off, and it rang right in the middle of his end of his segment there. But nice to have you with us. A lot of conversation, baseball-wise, football-wise, soccer-wise. A lot of things going on right now. No change, I guess, with the Washington Baseball Club, Mr. Snyder. I don't know about the football club. What's our story there? What's the football club doing first?
same old, if you will. You know, I guess the information that most recently came out was regarding there's been no movement on sale. The latest that we heard was that the NFL owners did discuss the sale at their meetings, but there was no desire to push him out. Now, in the meantime, there was a report on ESPN last week that he could be up to $1 billion in debt to Bank of America as a result of the financing that he had to do to take out the loans to buy out his partners. And there was also a report that he's under investigation by federal authorities for falsifying loan documents to take out a $55 million line of credit on the team without the permission of the minority shareholders, the three minority shareholders, which he ousted, which was part of the thing that came out when they were trying to sell the team or buy their shares, sell their shares. They saw that there was this loan that was taken out, and the bylaws of the team, the sale agreement, say that nothing can be borrowed against the team without all the owners saying yes. They said they never approved it, and so that's a serious issue for him as well. Meanwhile, he also told the NFL that he wants indemnification against any future lawsuits should he sell the team, and that he was demanding that, to which they all responded, what we need is indemnification from you for any other future lawsuits. So the stories off the field continue. As far as what's going on the field, of course, they hired Eric Bieniemy to be the offensive coordinator. I think that was about two weeks ago, maybe three now. And, you know, and they franchised their interior defensive lineman, Daron Payne, who had a really good season. So they're going to see what they can get done as far as either getting him a long-term deal, which would be very interesting because they already have Jonathan Allen, Fedarian Mathis last year, and then they still have Chase Young and Montez Sweat coming up. And very few teams would be willing to allocate that amount of money to a position, like especially to a defensive tackle, let alone like defensive line. You don't see many teams spending the amount of capital that the Commanders have on that group, which normally comes at the expense of other ones.
Roger?
Mike, a couple of things just to follow up on that. I've seen some reports where Dan Snyder seems to be a little more involved from the operation of the team than we've heard until just recently. And so I'm just wondering whether, you know, you're there every day in the area. Is that the case?
You know, if he's involved in the operation of the team, it would be a bit of a surprise, I guess. It seems like things have really just kind of gone on around him. It was interesting that they were able to get the money to sign, to give the contract to Eric Bieniemy, but that was kind of a must-do. They need to fill that position. A lot of people thought that they might just promote from within rather than going outside. But that was more of a football move. It will be the franchising of Daron Payne is kind of in line with what we expect to be their philosophy, where they're just not going to commit any long-term money. So we'll see how free agency kind of shakes out. If they're very active to the extent that they can be in free agency, and you see them putting that sort of large guarantees up, it might hit that Dan Snyder is more interested in staying than we thought. But if they kind of go on and you don't see a lot of movement in terms of free agency, that would hint that a sale is probably imminent, because every time they do an NFL team offers a guaranteed contract, they have to put that money in escrow. And I just can't see Dan Snyder putting any serious amount of money in escrow, because it's certainly not like he's going to get it back in the sale. That to me is a big reason why I think that they would be out on somebody like Lamar Jackson and even trying to negotiate with him, because it would require them to put upwards of $250 million into escrow. And while it would be a good football move, I just don't think it makes financial sense for Dan Snyder if he's trying to sell the team.
Yeah, he doesn't have the money.
Talk about that, then they got to give up two first-round draft choices. You know, now that he's been franchised, I mean, unless they can make some kind of a separate deal. As we said, it's not a locked-in franchise. It's a what's the terminology, Roger?
Transition.
Non-exclusive.
Right,
it's non-exclusive. Look, the two first-round draft picks, given the Commanders' history with draft picks and the way that they initially were trading them away for candy, now they've been a little bit more cautious with giving away their draft picks. I think the two first-round draft picks to get Lamar Jackson from Baltimore, completely worth it for the Commanders to do. A, they would be getting the guy that turned most of the state of Maryland and a significant portion of their existing fan base from Commanders fans to Ravens fans. B, he would probably be the best quarterback that the franchise has had since Joe Theismann broke his leg. So it would make complete and total sense to do it from a football standpoint. I think the bigger issue is, and if they were able to get him to sign the contract or sign the tender and then be traded, they might be able to negotiate for, say, a first-round pick and one of those defensive linemen that they're going to need to get rid of, or another player. Like, I could see them doing a first-round pick, maybe a first, a second, and say Deron Payne. A first and a second, or and a future second, and Montez Sweat or Chase Young or somebody like that to bring them in, because they're not going to be able to re-sign all four of those guys plus Phil Mathis. You know, you got five first-round picks on the defensive line. They just can't retain all five of them. So they're going to have to make some tough choices. And sending one to Baltimore in exchange for Lamar Jackson, I think, would make good football sense. Now, financially.
But also the fact, Mike, that has, if I remember correctly, 26 or 28 million dollars left in the cap. And so somebody would have to pick up a lot of money somewhere.
Yeah. And, I mean, I just think financially the Commanders just don't have it. Like, I can't see right now the return on investment for Dan Snyder if he's planning on selling the team. Now, if he's planning on keeping the team and he's willing to spend that money and he has it to spend, then it makes complete and total sense for them to be in on somebody like Lamar Jackson, because they are they really do need a franchise quarterback, and he's the best one out there. And look, I think they like Sam Howell. I think they want to give Sam Howell a legitimate shot. He was a guy who was graded as a possible first-round draft pick come after his junior year, had he come out then, but he stayed for a year, and he went in the fifth. Now, do I think he's a typical fifth-round pick? No, but do I think that there certainly are question marks about his ability to play in the NFL based on the limited sample size that we saw and what they said, and the fact that, you know, his struggles in college. So, you know, if you have the chance to get somebody like Lamar Jackson here in D.C., you take it.
Mike, does Dan Snyder still own Red Zebra Media?
I believe that they were either sold or they went bankrupt. I think that his holding right, his major holding right now comes in the form of red zone management, which is like a investment firm hedge fund type thing. But I'll tell you what, I was searching all week for any information about like how much their portfolio was worth, anything like that. I couldn't find a doggone thing. Other than that, it's the Redskins, and I'm sorry, the Redskins, the Commanders, whatever you want to call it. So much of his net worth is based solely on the 100% share that he owns. And that is the major source of income that he has, is what he gets from the Commanders. For example, like he uses it like a piggy bank. He charged the team $4.5 million to put the team's logo on the tail of his private jet and called it advertising. Now, gentlemen, I don't know too much about advertising. I'm not an advertising guy. But I normally think if you're going to advertise something, it has to be something that people can see.
Right.
Nobody ever sees this doggone jet. So where's the advertising benefit in it?
He may find out. He may find out that's not a valid deduction on his income tax. I'll tell you that right now. Well, let's swing over to baseball for a second. Well, how about the baseball club? Because Washington.
I've been saying as long as we've been talking about this that there is really a limited possibility of that sale going through until the Masson deal is taken care of. And there's really little that can be done with the Masson deal until the Baltimore Orioles ownership is taken care of. So they're in this holding pattern because the Nationals own so little of their own domestic TV rights, and they don't have the ability to negotiate another contract. There's just not a real viable source of revenue right now for anybody. And, you know, like they are capable of making money, but they rely almost exclusively on their share of shared revenue and ticket sales to make any revenue. They just don't have the ability to bring in money because that television deal is so bad. And nobody really wants to take that on until Major League Baseball and anybody can sort out, you know, this ownership and how much the Orioles are actually going to pay the Nationals on a regular basis as part of their TV revenue, because they've been massively underselling them. You know, I think one estimate was that the television contracts revenues for the Nationals should be worth somewhere in the neighborhood of $100 to $150 million, and their cut from Masson from the Orioles was like 25.
Wow.
Holy smokes.
That's unbelievable. Because, you know, with the NBC Sports Philly, the Phillies are 25% owners of that whole network.
Yeah.
You know, and well, we talked about that. And then you had told us that NBC Sports DC, that was sold, right? It's not part of NBC
Monumental.
Anymore.
Monumental.
Yeah.
So all of those, and that's not uncommon. Like with one of the big issues that Major League Baseball league-wide is having is a lot of these local sports nets that had rights to TV to baseball teams have gone bankrupt. You know, with Bally going under, like a lot of them are suffering from this. But you know, a lot of those teams will have abilities to go out and independently negotiate to find another contract that might be able to close that revenue gap. The Nationals do not. You know, they are kind of locked in to this whole thing with Masson and the Baltimore Orioles because of the favor that Bud Selig did Peter Angelos when they wanted to move the team to D.C.
Yeah,
you're talking about a complicated big money operation right there. How about your forte? Let's talk a little about soccer. What's happening on the soccer front?
Well, we're still into the MLS season. As good as the Philadelphia Union looked on 2 weeks ago in their opening game, they did not, in going down to Inter Miami and losing 2-0. So they'll get a chance to bounce back. The CONCACAF Nations League or Champions League has started. So that's kind of the international tournament for this hemisphere. Of course, the LAFC and the Union will both be involved in that. So the teams are starting to get up and running. You know, it'll be another couple of weeks, I think, before things start to really shake out. It's too early to make any major predictions about what may be happening as far as domestic soccer goes. On the women's side of things, I think the Washington Spirit just signed the youngest player in women's soccer. She's a 16-year-old girl who's going to be playing professionally for the Washington Spirit next year. So congratulations.
Is she in it from outside of the country, or does she?
Yeah, she's to be able to sign a contract like that at that age, you have to be born in the country that you're playing. You have to live and have some sort of connection to the country that you're playing in.
Oh, okay.
So they can't even in Europe. You know, you can't really just sign a 16-year-old to a professional contract unless they're a citizen of that country.
Okay, because I know baseball players, they have in the international, they've gotten a lot of 16-year-olds, you know, from Latin America, and but you know, it's a big difference in schooling. And how old was Joe Nuxall, Don? Wasn't he 16 when he first got to the major leagues?
Yep. Well, that was during the war, though.
Yeah, during the war, yeah, right.
Yeah, he was 16. Tommy Brown, third baseman for the Dodgers, he was 16. He was just graduated from high school. There were a couple players in that 16, but that was a rarity because of the war.
Well, I don't think that I've seen anybody under the age of, I think, like, now it's like 19 is the earliest age they make it up.
Yeah, absolutely. I will say this about the Union, that they are probably now the highest percentage that as far as fan support that they've had in their existence, Mike. There's no doubt about it. I think they're getting more media coverage than they ever did before. And I think it's just like you've talked about the MLS, what a franchise is worth now, like, for instance, St. Louis. It's just the MLS is growing leaps and bounds. There's just no doubt about it.
Well, yeah, and, you know, we have proof of concept, and we're going on. We're closer to 30 years than we are anything else of MLS soccer. I think at this point it's pretty safe to say that it's taken hold. It's taken root. It continues to grow. It's okay to call it, successful in certain terms. It's not a league that's necessarily going anywhere. You know, in terms of popularity, will it ever overtake baseball? Well, you know, in certain respects, it has. You can talk about average attendance is pretty close. I would venture to guess that local TV viewership for MLS games is close in a lot of markets. In terms of popularity, I don't know if it'll ever break that up the big four of Major League Baseball, basketball, hockey, and certainly it'll never touch the NFL.
Well, they certainly certainly helped out by having the expansion teams that they have in the cities they have, because now, you know, it's really like hockey had to do it to really get national exposure all the way across the country, and now MLS has done basically the same thing. They go to Miami, they go to Seattle, they go here, you know, so now they're getting a full coverage.
Yeah, and they've been a little more I want to say they've been a little more calculating in certainly how they've expanded. And, you know, now it's just about increasing the profile of the league. Now, will it ever overtake one of the major European leagues? I don't think so, because at the end of the day, I've never heard kid grow up and say, you know what, nobody dreams about scoring the winning goal to win MLS Cup. They all do it to win the Champions League trophy, right? Just like when we were kids and you were imagining batting, it was batting in the ninth to win the World Series, not the Japanese League title. It's not to say disparage those leagues. It's just like that's what hockey players want to lift the Stanley Cup. Football players want to the Lombardi Trophy. Basketball players want the Larry O'Brien Trophy. I don't see many basketball players saying, you know what? What I really want to do is win the Euro League title. So those are where your destination leagues are. MLS just doesn't have that, and I doubt they'll ever be able to get it. But if they're comfortable with where they are and growing the game domestically, raising the profile, getting good players in, maybe when they're young and moving them on or later on, and so that we get a chance to see it, I think that there's room for that and they can be successful.
Roger?
Yeah, and they will be. As far as the United go, you know, they have definitely their fan support. I mean, there's just no doubt about it. And the one thing is they're on basically there's some paid TV now, you know, in addition to Valley and commercial TV, but and they, you know, they're on 92.9 the gate. I mean, the number one sports station. So,
yeah. So, hey, gentlemen, one more thing. I know that Doug will probably be joining us shortly, but from this area, it's halftime in the Big East tournament, and Villanova's leading Georgetown 41-20, it looks like. This could be the end of the era. I think that barring a monumental comeback and a great run to win the Big East, and then somehow a great run in the tournament, this will be the last game that we'll see Patrick Ewing coach Georgetown. And with him...
Yeah, you're right. Syracuse lost this afternoon. North Carolina just won the ACC tonight. They're winning this one convincingly against Boston College just ended a moment ago. So you're exactly right, Mike. We're ready to go to Doug down in Baltimore, Washington as well. Thank you very much. You got great input tonight.
All right.
Have
talk
a great
to you later.
Week, Mike. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it. As
Take
always.
Care. Bye.
Doug, you're in the House of Horrors over there. We've had many things we've talked about in the National Football League. Jackson, of course, has dominated the last few weeks. A decision was finally made, at least a half-hearted decision has been made, and some of your observations on that first.
Well, I just got off the bench. You know, Frank called and said we need a closer for the ninth inning. Go get your arm loose. So here I am calling in, you know, as the closer of the show. So I didn't hear, you know, you guys probably had this discussion. Certainly I'm more than happy to give you what I'm hearing because it's, you know, this bell doesn't ring and ripple outwards towards the rest of the nation and football and everything. Obviously I'm at the epicenter here in Baltimore. So what did Mike say about Lamar?
He thought that it would be worthwhile. I didn't question him. He thought it'd be worthwhile if Washington gave up the two first round draft choices or a first and second and another player and take
one of
Lamar Jackson
blind.
Because he would then make the Washington franchise a notable property again.
Yeah. I mean, look, I think There's an awful lot going on, you know, with this whole entire – I mean, you could do the whole damn show on, you know, the things that I'm hearing and the things that have been said. You know, I think you have a contingency of people led by, you know, idiots like, you know, Stephen A. Smith and people like that that think, you know, that Eric DaCosta's the problem, the Ravens are the problem, the Ravens are a terrible franchise, you know, all these different things that have – circulated, if you will, by that ridiculous survey that comes out, you know, by the NFL that ranks the teams in whatever five or six different categories from you know, the cafeteria to the training room to the strength and conditioning and to all these things. And, you know, the Ravens got, you know, one poor grade in the strength and conditioning coach because he was the COVID super spreader. And apparently some of these old, you know, players are talking about how he injured them and they didn't like his training mechanisms and those sorts of things. But, you know, people are piling on top of the Ravens at this point because of the Lamar Jackson contract. And everybody thinks that he's, you know, he's 26, he's a former MVP, he's this, he's that, we should just pay him the money. And my guess is, well, first of all, the Ravens rank 17th out of 32. So if you think the Ravens are terrible, then there's 15 teams that are worse. And let's also rank that correctly in saying that the Washington, whatever's you call them, are 32. And that the Kansas City Chiefs got an F- in their training room. But no one heard that because they won the Super Bowl. So, let's call that what it is. You know, with regard to Lamar Jackson is the equivalency of 50% of the problem, okay, because he doesn't have an agent, and he's been really wishy-washy on what it is exactly that he wants, because the Ravens have been, I guarantee you, they've made him more than a fair deal when it comes to, you know, not only what they were willing to pay him, but what they thought he was worth, and it was likely a fair deal. Apparently that's not what he wanted, and apparently they could not budge, okay? So at the end of the day, the Ravens basically said, you go find what you think you're worth. And the problem with that is, you know, you're going to have to find a team that's going to pay him north of $230 million guaranteed in addition to whatever the total contract is.
And they got to have cap space to do it.
Not only that, but they have to give up 2 first-round draft picks if the Ravens decide
right.
to decline. Here's where it gets, you know, a little complicated. So if you look at the teams that have the most salary cap, there's really only one, I think, that could potentially make a run at him, which would be the Atlanta Falcons. They have just over $60 million. So if they made the decision to say, okay, well, we're going to front load this contract, and we're going to give you what you want, and we're going to make this first year $60 million. Now the Ravens have to go back and say, we were probably prepared to put the regular franchise tag on you for 45. Do we want to go to 60? So my guess is that the Ravens, if in fact someone like the Falcons or somebody decided they wanted to sign him, they're probably going to match it anyway, right? Because now they still hold the cards to say, oh, you found your deal with the Falcons? Oh, the Falcons, you want him? Okay, well, let's make a deal. Because we're gonna go ahead and match the contract. How badly do you want him? Because we want more than 2 first-round draft picks. So, you know, in my opinion, I think the Ravens may. I was a little bit upset, I think, as it drew near the 4 o'clock time there, that I thought that they had talked about making this, you know, non-exclusive franchise designation, and I thought, why in the hell would they do that? That's stupid. Well, I'm guessing that Eric DaCosta got all the intel that he needed, and the Ravens are taking a gamble to say, he's priced himself out of the market. Now you're hearing things about owners in collusion. That idiot from the Browns, you know, who gave Deshaun Watson a fully guaranteed contract. There's 31 other owners that thought that was stupid, right? So no one's going to give him a fully guaranteed contract that I'm aware of that the Ravens apparently have done their homework on to say, we're going to give you this franchise tag. You go find your fully guaranteed contract because I don't think you're going to find it. And then when you don't, now you have other issues. Now you got locker room issues. Now you got Lamar pissed off because he's going to be making less than Daniel Jones, right? So you're going to have all these issues that are going to crop up. Can the Ravens still come back to an agreement with him and get this done? I don't know.
Let me just throw in a quick note. Watch ESPN2. Boeheim's been coached in Syracuse since 1976 through this year, 47 years. And I don't have the sound on, but they're saying that this is going to be his final season. Now, I have not heard that he has made that announcement personally, but that's what they're saying, that this is going to be it for Boeheim after 47 years at Syracuse. Okay, Roger,
yeah,
go ahead.
I just saw that over 1,000 wins at Syracuse. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
They just came over on Yahoo, said that he, after the loss, the 77-74 loss, it is his last game at Syracuse.
So he's retired.
Either, Well, he's either been retired or get fired. Hopefully,
well,
he'll just retire.
Well,
and
yeah,
Rick Pitino was saying that he's still looking for that big time school to make one last rung on one last rung on this on the ladder of success going to the NCAA tournament. He's having a great year with the team he's coaching right now, so we'll see what happens, whether he gets back to one of the major franchises or not.
Want that big payoff, just like Jamar
yep.
Wants. But you know what, Doug? I wanted to get back to we've talked about this for a number of weeks, and we were talking to Roy Cummings about it earlier. And, you know, you look at this transitional tag now, okay?
Mm-hmm.
It changes everything. And
mm-hmm.
I have said before, I don't think that Jackson's going to play for the, for the Ravens this year. I just don't.
Mm-hmm.
And Roy agrees that what's happening now is, it's like the stock market. He had a great analogy. It takes an adjustment, and this is what is happening now in the NFL. There is an
mm-hmm.
adjustment. What do you think?
Right. Well, first of all, I mean, you know, if no one chooses to offer him said contract that he's willing to agree to, and, you know, the Ravens still can't negotiate this deal, they have until, like, mid-July, if that were to be true, you know, he's if he doesn't want to play football this year, he doesn't have to sign, you know, this franchise tag agreement. He can sit out the
mm-hmm.
year, but he doesn't get paid, and it doesn't count towards
right.
the Ravens salary cap.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he can now what we're doing is we're going to go back and forth, and, you know, he's going to be a pain in the neck, and the Ravens, like I said, they've already pissed him off because they gave him the $32 million tag instead of the 45. So now he, you know, this he's saying, well, this is what the Ravens think of me. So now I'm pissed off, right? So, you know, I don't know, you know, because you got to be careful. It's a dual-edged sword. If he goes to another team and he changes his demands, well, the Ravens can just match it, right? So he can't go say, well, I want to go play for the Panthers because they're going to give me, you know, $180 million guaranteed. So the Ravens can say, okay, well, we'll do the same thing. Now you're going to stay in Baltimore. So what's he going to do then? You know, now
mm-hmm.
he's just not going to show up for OTAs. He's not going to show up for meetings. They have a brand new offensive coordinator. So this isn't done by, you know, a long shot. There's still a lot of gamesmanship left to be played. But at the end of the day, the Ravens made what they thought was the best move for their franchise. Because I've been saying this for ever, right?
Mm-hmm.
Lamar
mm-hmm.
Jackson cannot play for the Ravens for $45 million. It's going to hamstring the team. They don't have enough salary cap space. They're going to have to cut players. They're going to have to restructure players. They're going to have no freedom to move about in free agency. And it's just not a wise business decision. So
mm-hmm.
all the
I said earlier,
said
I thought
there,
it was 26 or 28 is their cap.
Yeah.
How much space do they have?
It's right around 26. But you got to understand, you know, you have dodo birds like DeMaurice Smith from the Players Association that are, you know, standing there with signs saying sign Lamar and, you know, he's worth this and he's worth that. Well, he doesn't care about Lamar. He doesn't care about the Ravens. He's trying to stick it up the backside of all the owners to create a precedent that says quarterbacks are now getting paid fully guaranteed contracts. So there's a lot of pieces. Yeah, there's a lot of things. That was an outlying contract that one dum-dum decided that he was going to give to somebody. And now the Cleveland Browns are going to have to eat that $56 million a year for the next 4 years, right? So good for them. I mean, they can finish dead last in the AFC North for 4 years for all I care, you know, because of that. So you want to say
they very well might.
They might. I mean, I'm just saying this is the way I look at it. If Lamar Jackson goes out and he finds his sweetheart deal and you get some, you know, team that wants to purge and pay him all these different things and cut players and do all these things, okay, well, the Ravens will take the two first-round draft picks and they'll use their $26 million and they'll build an efficient football team and they'll start all over. You know, this is a classic case in any sporting, you know, franchise that, you know, who runs this asylum? You know, is it the warden or is it the inmates? And you have all these people that say, you know, these professional athletes, well, I don't want to play anymore, trade me, you know, a la what, Kevin Durant, you know, Kyrie Irving. You have all these people that make these demands, okay, well, we'll see you later, and we'll take what we get for you, and we'll get people here that want to play. You know, because I'm telling you, the media is making the Baltimore Ravens out to be the bad guys here, and they're not.
Mm-hmm.
They're not.
Roger.
And I think that
no,
I think you're going to find – you're also going to find that the most difficult portion of this entire contract negotiation is for the sheer fact that Lamar Jackson doesn't have an agent. He's been mm-hmm. unresponsive, and he doesn't even know what he wants. He doesn't know what he's doing. He just says, I want this $230-some million, all right? So – he's going to – what's Lamar going to do tomorrow? Is he going to call up the Atlanta Falcons, you know, GM and say, hey, you know, let's talk a deal? I mean, he's representing himself. I mean, how the hell does that even work? So,
he wants to save – he and his mother want to save the 20% or whatever the deal is, you know, with the cut that the agent gets. Well, we had Fred Khalil on earlier, you know, who's a sports director at Atlanta News First. And he was saying that the Falcons do have a cap problem. And he said what their biggest need is a quarterback. But if they are having any kind of cap problem, they're not going to put $44 million into Lamar Jackson. And I think what they're going to go for is a college quarterback. Because he doesn't think that the guy that they have now, the backup, the Mariota, is that good.
Yeah. Yeah, that guy Desmond Ridder, I think.
Ridder,
you know,
yeah.
Look, I mean, you know, the draft that comes about, you know, will be dominated by teams moving up to get Young, Stroud, now Richardson, who was a freak at the combine, and Levis, and you'll see, you know, those four guys go easily in the top 10, and you'll have a lot of maneuvering between, you know, the Colts, the Panthers, the Raiders, and anybody, you know, these teams that want to, you know, figure out who their next quarterback is, you know, and the Ravens probably they did their homework, and they can say, well, you know, the Saints aren't going to sign Lamar Jackson. They just signed Derek Carr. The so-and-sos aren't going to because they don't have the cap money. You know what I mean? So they already knew the number was $45 million if they gave him the other franchise tag. So they were already probably willing to pay the $45 million anyway, right? They just did it this way so that they could say, hey, Kay, you think you're worth more than $45 million and you want a guaranteed contract? Go find it. Let's see if
mm-hmm.
it's out there. You know, and I think
by this time next week, we ought to know a lot more about what's going to happen because everybody's going to have to make a decision and make a move. Let's switch for a second. I want to talk a little baseball, but I want to talk golf.
Yeah.
For most people that hear you on the show, PGA Professional has his own club down in the Baltimore, Washington area. And Doug, we've talked over the years about golf, and this last weekend was a perfect example at the Arnold Palmer tournament. In fact, that a player had posted 50 times and never won a tournament, and he wins at Bay Hill and collects $3 million. It was one of the specialized tournaments where the winner share jumped way up over $3 million, and second place was $2 million. But anyway, this week the players, 49 of the top 50 players are going to be playing this weekend starting tomorrow at the Players. And what a great tournament last week at Bay Hill. This one should be even better.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, that's what dreams are made of, man. That was it Kurt Kitayama or whatever his name was that won that?
Kitayama, yeah.
Yeah, now you have
50 times as opposed to never won.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, that's what life's all about, you know.
And he played all around the world in three or four different tours, not just the PGA Tour.
Look, there's lifers out there that, you know, they'll – I mean, there's all kinds of printed material and videos and things of people that, you know, at some of these levels will live out of their car and you know, eat whatever and do whatever they can to, you know, get their opportunity. And – you know, that's,
did you see?
That's
did you see that last putt on the 18th? That was a 60
oh,
something,
marked
60,
it. Yeah, had 62
or feet, or I can't remember the exact number of what it was, but it was from. It looked like he was putting from Chicago.
Right. Yeah. Great stuff. I mean, that's
Fantastic.
It's great for him. It's like we talked and joked about this before. If you could be a one-hit wonder, I'd take 3.6 mil and ride off into the sunset. And if that was the only time I ever won, well, by golly, you know, that'd be wonderful. And I think, what is it, this week at the Players, refresh my memory because I know you know all this kind of stuff, but I know that the defending champion is not there because he's now on the LIV Tour. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yeah, they've never had a double winner, and you're correct. Cameron Smith.
That's right.
He's
That's
been
right.
banned from the Open, and he can't play in this tournament either.
Yeah. Okay. Right. I mean, that's, you know, tough knuckles for him. You know, right? So.
Frank Selamy, we're out of time. Man, oh, man, it showed up by so quickly.
Thank you very much.
Let me turn it over to our executive producer, Frank Carroll.
Have a great week. God bless. Frank, as always, thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Well, thank all our guests coming on today and all our hosts. Doug, we really appreciate every time you come on. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to talk to you each and every night of the week. In grateful appreciation to the men and women of the United States Armed Forces and the men and women of Police and Fire Services. When you're out there and see somebody in uniform, please let them know they're there. These programs are also dedicated to those who've lost their lives in line of duty. Deputy Robert Anthony Carroll, Patrolman David Curtis, Patrolman Jeffrey Falcott, Patrolman Jeffrey Yazowitz, Sergeant Thomas Pager, Detective Randy Bell, Detective Ricky Childers, San Diego Officer Mike Henner, Sergeant Tom Wilson, Charlotte County Sheriff's Department, Patrolman Charlie Condit, Tarpon Springs Police Department, Deputy Chief Mike Godwin, Philadelphia Fire Department, Lieutenant Joyce Craig Lewis, Philadelphia Fire Department, Sergeant James O'Connor, Philadelphia Police Department, Sergeant Chris LeBake, Hillsborough County Sheriff's Department, Patrolman Ronaldo Christman, Lakeland PD, Lieutenant Joe Zerba, Newcastle County Police, Deputy Josh Meyer, Nassau County Sheriff's Department, Captain Matt Letourneau, Philadelphia Fire Department, Captain Chris Leach, Wilmington Fire Department. Lieutenant Art Pope, Wilmington Fire Department. Trooper Joe Bullock, Florida Highway Patrol. Trooper Chelsea Richards, Florida Highway Patrol. Chief Al Hogle, Longboat Key Police Department. Chief Jimmy Ford, Wilmington Fire Department. Deputy Mike Hargrove, Pine Ellen County Sheriff's Department. Deputy Blaine Lane, Polk County Sheriff's Department. Deputy Chris Myers, Polk County Sheriff's Department. And Sergeant Christopher Fitzgerald, Philadelphia Sheriff's Department and Temple University Police Department. My brothers and sisters, so you may be 10-7 at this point in time, and sometime we'll be 10-10 at the table of the Lord. Until that time, may the roads rise up to meet you, may the winds be always at your back. May the rains fall softly on your fields, and the sun shine lightly on your face. Until we meet again, may the good Lord keep you and your families always in the palm of his hand. Good night. God bless, and have a great week.
Shem alek ma yelama, Shem ahezah yelama, Son Hashem evorat fet, Hakuig again ma yelama. Shem alek ma yelama, a fiery blade engaged to lead, he'd break the bravest in the field. play and proudly toast his noble fame, whose spirit and with mind aflame saw Esham's strength and length of days. Shame on him, my Ilama.
All units be advised, 1999 has responded to his last emergency. May God rest his soul and all the souls of the faithful departed. Bob, we love you and we miss you.